The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
The Guardian Books Podcast with Claire Armistead.
So, after one of the most mean-spirited contests in Booker memory, we have a winner of the 2011 Man Booker Prize. With me in the studio to discuss it are Lisa Allardyce, editor of The Guardian Saturday Review, and reviewer Alex Clark. Lisa, this is what's known in the trade as a delayed drop, so please will you put everyone out of their misery and announce the winner?
I will, absolutely, although I feel terribly strange having spent years going to the party knowing as a journalist who has won and having a couple of glasses of champagne and trying desperately not to tell everybody who's won. But I'm absolutely thrilled with the winner, who is Julian Barnes for The Sense of an Ending.
Alex Clark, are you hurrooing or harumphing?
No, I'm hurrooing. I think it's a most extraordinary result considering all the hoo-ha about literary novels, non-literary novels, thrillers, readability. It's quite weird that after all that, we've come to what is evidently a literary novel.
It's the most extraordinary thing. When you think of all the writers who they didn't put on the shortlist, Hollinghurst, Anne Enright, Philip Hensher, Linda Grant, so many of them, and they weren't there. And then to have all of these new writers, and then to go for one of the most sort of longest established names.
Yeah, but let me pick you up there, because actually there is a school of thought that it's more of a novella than a novel. It's 160 pages on Amazon, which compares with Ian McEwan's Amsterdam, also not long, at 192 pages. Alex, defend its honour.
Well, I think if it's the best piece of writing, it's the best piece of writing, although it doesn't really hold water, does it? Because then you could award it to a short story. I will say, in its defence, I had to read the ending about three or four times, which made it a rather longer reading experience for me. But I don't see, really, why if you think this is the best book of the year, you shouldn't award the prize to it.
Now, do you think it is the best book of the year? Or is this an award for the reputation of Julian Barnes, who we all know and love, and he has been up there four times before with bigger and possibly arguably more substantial books?
I think it's an exquisite piece of writing. Barnes is a huge fan of Ford Madox, Ford the Good Soldier, and it's got all of the nuances here that unreliable the narrator. As Alex said, I don't think we have on the desk discussed a book so passionately, what we thought happened at the end, what didn't happen. All of us have a theory. I did in fact cheat and email Julian and say, please, please put us out of our misery. We have to know what it is. We can't stop talking about it.
Without actually giving away the ending, Tony, the central character, is one of the great unreliable narrators, isn't he?
Perhaps. One of the best, because you don't know that he's an unreliable narrator, reliably, do you?
The voice is incredibly strong, which is, somebody said that they found the first half less convincing, which is the young Tony. But all of it is narrated from the elder Tony's perspective, so I didn't think that was a fair. I think the tone is very consistent throughout. He does extraordinary things with, you know, what are now creative writing tropes of flashbacks and unreliability, etc. And he handles them so coolly. And
there is one absolutely devastating coup de théâtre in the second half, isn't there, when his younger self is revealed to himself in writing.
Yes, and he has to go back and unpick everything.
We can't reveal what that is because we don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't read it.
He's also having great fun. There are, and again, this won't spoil it. I would just say to the readers, you know, you do have to pay attention to the Aldebaran and the Wisteria. And there are all sorts of...
and the eggs.
And also a brilliant bit in it where he just sits in a pub and describes ordering chips off the menu, which, you know, in a tiny literary novel, you think to have the leisure to do that. It's very good on longueur, really.
Yeah, I think he concludes that they're not chips. They're actually potatoes masquerading as chips, doesn't he? Anyway, I'm going to now change tack slightly and do we shed a tear for the ones that got away? Alex, you reviewed a couple of them very enthusiastically.
Yes, I did. I reviewed Stephen Kelman's Pigeon English and Carol Birch's Jamrach's Menagerie, and I like both of them very much. I don't know if I ultimately thought they were Booker winners, and I was quite surprised to see both of them on the shortlist. So although I don't shed a tear for them not winning necessarily, I think it's fantastic that they've done so well and got so far.
Pigeon English actually has a another go at a prize, doesn't it?
It does. Pidgin English is on the Guardian First Book Award, which I think is absolutely right. It's an incredibly affecting tale, and it is very sweet. It's very moving. It's based on the Damalola case. It is a first novel. I have a slight problem perhaps with the pidgin in it.
Who doesn't have a problem with the pidgin?
I kept imagining the discussions around the book table, and at which point somebody was going to go, but there is the pidgin. I'm afraid I'm one of those slightly churlish journalists, I guess, and I've been shedding a tear for the writers who didn't make it onto the shortlist and have found it difficult thereafter to get
over
it.
You couldn't take this shortlist very seriously, rather.
I thought it was such a strong year for fiction. And again, I don't feel that people should be given sort of lifetime achievement awards, and I don't think Barnes is here, but I thought you could give St. Aubyn a place on the Booker shortlist for one sentence.
That's right, the final part of his Melrose saga.
And the Hollinghurst, again, is so exquisitely realise. I just felt there were so many strong books that to say that all of these were better than those books. I now think I am actually allergic to the term readability, which sounds like some dreadful sort of government...
Or rattling, that's another one that...
Readability was the big problem. That debate was a big problem. It sort of killed any sensible conversation about it. It is a stupid, stupid word to use.
Let's just talking about readable, the three other ones that we haven't mentioned yet, one of which, Snowdrops, is a thriller. Did we seriously rate that? That seemed to fall back in the...
It was certainly readable. Having read my way through a whole bunch of first books, I think that it is his first novel. And again, it is an accomplished first book. The Booker isn't there
for the right prize for it. Half-Blood Blues, Essie Adugian.
I think was one of the best written on the shortlist,
that
actually.
That was the one that I had a suspicion might creep through at the last minute.
Yeah, and it probably deserved to progress. Whether it deserved to progress to shortlist stage, I'm not so sure.
And the other one is The Sisters Brothers, Patrick DeWitt, a Western by a Canadian.
Fun, and it's, I think, book prize judges are always so relieved to get any wit or humour once the time they've worked their way, usually through 100 harrowing novels, that sometimes you can be so relieved you leap on a joke like... I thought that they are all, not to take away from those books, but the Barnes, I felt, was in a class of its own, and that justice has been
done. Well, let's just move on now again to... this has been a really bad year for the Booker, hasn't it? Because the Booker International also had a spat. Tell us a bit about that.
Oh, the Philip Roth brouhaha. Yes. Carmen Khalil infamously saying now that reading Philip Roth is rather like him sitting on your face. I am slightly with Carmen as far as Roth is... clearly a wonderful writer. He is slightly too macho for me, and I know, even if I wouldn't phrase it like that, where she is coming from. I think what it crystallised is the problem with prizes, and which Alex has written about brilliantly, which is the sense of, I feel, you either get one person drives them through or you get a compromise throughout. And
Did we have a sense of an evil spirit in this judging panel?
I think there was a toxic atmosphere around the whole debate, which kind of took me by surprise. And I thought there was some kind of a sort of combative, aggressive way in which the long list and the short list were sort of announced with, this is what we've done, that's it.
It was very much a prize of the Twitter age, wasn't it? They were all tweeting like mad, yeah, and everybody was tweeting about them. Do you think that
really
made it worse tempered because of the speed,
yes,
of those
reactions?
Because
you feel that you can really, yeah, people were just doing extraordinary things and saying extraordinary things. And actually, if you're going to go that far, have the cameras in the judging room.
Now, one thing that I think is quite ironic about the whole thing is this: when we look back from deep history in 20 years' time, what we will see is two blue blood winners of the Booker Prize,
yes,
Philip Roth,
yeah,
and Julian,
yes,
Barnes.
Exactly. Right. Barnes represents so much that school, the generation of McEwan, Amis, etc. He's male of a certain age. I mean, he is so much part of the literary establishment.
You could, I suppose, see him as a delightfully kind of Francophile writer. I mean, he's not entirely an English writer,
yes,
is he?
It's true.
It's quite a philosophical novel, isn't it?
Might be a way to try that. And I think you're absolutely right to make the point about Ford, Madox Ford. I think he is informed by all sorts of different traditions and influences.
So, Alex, what is this going to do for the literary prize, which we heard, which was announced this week, and it's been tailgating and all the bad publicity, isn't it? It's a new literary prize, which seemed to be hoping to take the area that seemed to have been vacated by the Booker.
Well, I mean, what it says is that it's going to prize excellence above anything else, and quite right too. I mean, I think it takes a lot to set up a new prize. Obviously, it takes quite a lot of funds. It takes a lot of publicity, which it has had, and it takes getting the right people in place. But we have seen in the past few years, we might say the Guardian First Book Prize, but also the Samuel Johnson Prize, the Orange Prize. They have all established themselves, haven't they? In those cases, they really carved out a niche. So it's interesting to see whether really we feel that the Booker has flagged so much that there is that niche to be filled.
Mm-hmm. And of course, they will be admitting American novels.
That's
which
right.
Is
and that is their kind of point of difference, isn't it?
Yes. Finally, I can't let this podcast end without raising a small cheer for the winner of the Guardian's own Not the Booker Prize, which was announced this afternoon. It was much better tempered, I have to say. It's King Crow by Michael Stewart, which weighs in at a comparatively mammoth 210 pages. But the big congratulations, of course, are to Julian Barnes.
Bravo.
From Alex Clark, Lisa Allardyce, me, Claire Armistead, and our producer, Tim Mavey, goodbye and long live the Booker.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.